It's winter, and rain is falling on California's central coast. Soon, the leafy greens of spinach and lettuce will be harvested and sent across the land to provide the nation with salads. But wait, there have been 21 incidents of E. coli or 15787 contaminations traced to those leafy greens over the past 10 years. Many have suffered, some have died. All fingers now point to California's Great Salad Bowl, and this leads us to ask, can government protect us from good food gone bad?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 530th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Santiago who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards, producer Carol Stafford on the phones, and Rebecca Rukeyser on the stories. Folks, in September, E. coli traced to spinach from California's salad bowl killed 3 and sickened 200 in 26 states. Later, lettuce from the same area sickened 5 dozen Taco Bell patrons in the Northeast. According to a survey of 1,200 of the nation's top food editors, the top story of 2006 was our vulnerability to E. coli 015787. And so today we ask, can we be protected from good food gone bad? We first ask this question to scientists, then to agriculture, and today we ask government. And here to help us find an answer, we have California State Senator Dean Flores, who is a Democrat from the town of Shafter.
Welcome aboard, Dean.
Good morning, Mike.
You're a Democrat from the city of Shafter. Where is Shafter for those of us listening in Florida?
Well, Shafter is in the middle part of the state of California. It's the you would call it the agricultural sector. Four counties that I represent actually produce most of the agriculture for the nation, in terms of leafy greens and other types of products like almonds.
Mm-hmm.
So very much part of the fiber and fabric of agriculture here in California.
You're sitting right on the hot seat, aren't you, Dean?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I was born in a farming town, still live in a farming town. So, you know, at the end of the day, you would say that our economy is pretty much based on farming.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a very, very, very important debate as we head in Sacramento to talk about the issues of food safety.
Well, how did you, Senator, become a focal point for the E. coli mission here, the way to find a way to eat these products safely? How did you become such a focal point in this endeavor?
Well, we began this with a hearing after the E. coli outbreak that affected 200 in the nation in October. I chair a committee in the California State Senate that has oversight over, if you will, foodborne types of emergency preparedness. One might call it the bioterrorist angle in terms of, is our food supply really protected in the event of bioterrorism in the state of California? So we started with a hearing, and the hearing really was focused on what was our reaction to this particular E. coli outbreak that began in the Salinas Valley, and whether or not our response was quick enough. In other words, could we trace it back fast enough in order to and ultimately find a culprit, but more importantly, to find out ultimately if there were things we can do in the system that can get us information quicker and faster so we can, in essence, try to get to these E. coli outbreaks in a much quicker way.
Mm-hmm. This is only the latest to be a decade-long.
Right.
Why are we starting to act now?
Well, I think, and this is the reason that we are starting to act now, is that we have always relied on industry and their good word in terms of the self-regulatory aspects of, particularly here in spinach and lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, industry has always said, we can handle it, we'll clean it up, we'll fix it. And we in government have always turned to the industry to do that. In fact, there was no such thing, as you know, as USDA-stamped vegetables as there is on USDA stamped beef.
Right.
Meaning very little government intervention. So I think that the state of California has been very lenient on the growers and packers and shippers, giving them ample time to self-regulate. But I think this really, after 21 outbreaks in this particular industry, it was clear to us that government needed to have a stronger hand in this.
And so enough is enough?
Here yeah, I think the industry, I mean, we finally, you know, at some point your constituents say, what are you, the government, doing to protect me?
Exactly what we're asking today.
Right. You know, protect my 2-year-old or my elderly mother, grandmother or my aunt or uncle. You know, when they put a piece of lettuce that goes from farm to fork, are you protecting us in the way that we think you should be protecting us as government? And I think that's the ultimate debate as we head into this session.
So it amounted to enough is enough. You know, this was after 21 times, it's time for the government to step in. So you held a public hearing. And what was the result of that hearing?
Well, the hearing was a very frightening glimpse into how little prepared we are in California, not just in terms of reacting to foodborne illnesses like E. coli, but the fact that we really didn't have any sort of, if you will, regulations on the farm other than relying on agriculture telling us they had good agricultural practices. And so from that hearing evolved, if you will, a discussion on whether or not we could structure legislatively some solutions that are pretty hard-hitting in terms of having inspectors in the fields, having higher standards for water, for irrigation practices, for soil amendments, compost, these types of things that had always been left to, if you will, the farms.
How did agriculture respond to your public hearings?
I think they responded very, if you will, defensively. Mm-hmm. I think they felt this was a passing issue that had a lot of hype, that somehow they would get past this. And, you know, ultimately, I think they felt that this was just going to be one of those hearings where another politician says, you know, this is a public, emergency and outcry, and then it passes. But I think what they failed to recognize is that the retailers themselves, the large change in California and the nation, had basically said, you know, we're going to not take any product anymore unless you guys practice good agricultural practices. And when it started to hit their wallet books, I think they began to get very serious about these good practices. I'm not sure if they took the committee or the legislature's thought about a regulatory approach very seriously, but on both ends now, you had government saying, we may regulate if you don't clean your act up, and you had, you know, their buyers saying, we don't think we're going to take your product anymore unless you do, you know, have the highest practices possible.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then and there they began their discussions on what they needed to do.
So really, it was the end of the beginning here. After 21 incidents of E. coli contaminations, we're looking at a situation where the government is saying, your constituents, the voters, are saying this, and the consumers are saying this to their upline, which was the retailers and whatnot. The end is now, what are you going to do?
Right.
So you held these public hearings, and they were kind of frightening for agriculture that has been traditionally free to operate on their own.
It's a real interesting debate, particularly in California, that we produce so much agriculture here, at least in the Salinas Valley and the Central Valley that I represent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the agriculture industry has always held a lot of sway in the state capital. And so I think they kind of felt that this is something that they would be able to walk back into the capital and say with a wink and a nod that everything was going to be okay. But after the hearing, such a dire picture was painted. You know, 2 FDA warnings, lettuce recommendations have been put on the shelf over the years, and then a second E. coli outbreak immediately following the most recent, where we had 200 hurt. And I think, you know, all of that compounded to, if you will, us, meaning the legislature and our office, putting in 3 major bills that we think will protect consumers in a much better way than the self-regulatory efforts of the industry.
Well, good, because we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you, Senator Flores, if government can indeed protect us.
Sure.
Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about E. coli 015787. This is the third part in a 3-part series on E. coli. First part, we ask scientists from across the land about new bacteria and what we can do to protect ourselves from it. Second part, we ask agriculture itself what agriculture can do to protect us, and now we're asking government. Do you think government can protect us? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Radio. We're back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with California State Senator Dean Flores about E. coli 015787, that toxic little bug that's wreaking havoc on our food chain. It comes especially in the form of leafy greens, lettuce, and spinach from California's great salad bowl here on the California Central Coast. And it's eaten throughout the land is our spring salads, and boy, we're looking at spring coming up and all of those fresh greens coming up, and we're wondering what government can do to keep us safe from that E. coli 015787. Wondering what you think about it as well. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Your chance to talk with California State Senator Dean Flores. Interesting note on the board. Producer Carol Stafford says, "But we eat salad all year long, Michael," which is true. So I ask you, State Senator Dean Flores, why don't we get sick from the salads that come from California's Imperial Valley?
Well, I think ultimately it has to do with terrain, and I'll just give you an example. And this is not to pick on certain areas of California, but if you broke down the 21 outbreaks that have occurred in California, a good majority of those have come from the Salinas Valley area.
Right.
And of course, that is the highest level of spinach growing anywhere, probably producing nearly 70% of the world's spinach.
Salad bowl of the world.
Right. But it's got different terrain. You know, there are creeks. There are pathways to water that can be infected with wildlife and mm-hmm. animals, E. coli, and it's, and many times using of creek water can be detrimental. We also know that area has used municipal wastewater, which can, in many cases, sometimes be looked at as carrying these types of bacteria in a recycled manner. And, of course, there are issues in terms of worker sanitation, which shouldn't differ from industry to industry. It should be the same, but quite right. frankly, without regulations, it can differ. And Salinas harvests many more seasons than the rest of the world. And, of course, you know, most of the processors putting them into those bags today can also be a cause of E. coli. More consumers are buying these types of products bagged, and we know that's just one more step to getting closer to E. coli versus taking it out and washing it. So there's a lot of different factors, but terrain also has quite a bit to do with it.
Oh. Okay, let me ask you the big question then. Can government protect us from E. coli 015787?
Well, I don't ever think we're going to say that we're going to eliminate E. coli completely from the food chain, particularly in leafy greens, but I think government can provide a stronger regulatory, if you will, framework on which to really make some decisions based on health versus economics. And by that I mean, the Department of Health Services having inspectors doing spot checks, making sure that water and amendments and good agricultural practices are followed is going to be absolutely the first step. The goal of reducing E. coli outbreaks is really to take things off the table that have the tendency to create E. coli. Without doing that in an every farm, every time manner, meaning everyone should sign up for this, has to sign up for it, then it's going to be very difficult to do. The regulatory approach offered by the industry in this case, which
the marketing order,
marketing agreement, is somewhat scary. Just the other day, they certified a vote that said most of the shippers and processors now have signed on to this. Those who produce 70% of the product is what the California Food Department has said is their threshold. And yes, what we found is that, less than 30 or 40 out of 170 actually signed up for this. That means, a good majority of processors either don't think it's important or didn't take the time to turn in a vote on joining this particular effort. And as you know, it only takes one or two rogue players. As we send this material to a large processing plant where all of this stuff is mixed together,
mm-hmm.
and it creates a very dangerous situation in many cases. So
yeah, one little bug.
Yes, exactly. And that's why we, I think if you look at the regulatory approach, we don't want to have 50 out of 170. That's a voluntary program. The regulatory approach is 170 out of 170 shall participate, and they should and will have good agricultural practices in order to be licensed. That, to us, is a better approach in terms of bringing the whole industry in, holding them accountable, and ultimately enforcing good agricultural practices. We think that's the better step, and that's how we make food, particularly leafy greens, safer.
Okay, folks, we're talking with California State Senator Dean Flores right here on The Food Chain, and you are invited to participate with your calls and comments. You know, this is an issue that does not just impact agriculture, it impacts just about everybody because those bugs can have a way of getting around the entire country as they have, and we're looking for a way to protect ourselves from them. So we're going to go to the Salinas Valley and talk with Chili Bob. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Michael. Good morning, Senator Flores.
Good morning.
My question is, Senator Flores, I understand where you're coming from, and I think now I'm understanding where you're going. Basically, what you're asking then, through your legislation, is that everybody is forced to sign up under the metrics that will be decided by the marketing agreement, marketing order process. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would probably say it's probably no different. The marketing agreement, marketing order approach, obviously, is everybody should sign up, and ultimately you will sign up because you'll have a seal, and if you don't have the seal, somehow no one will buy your product. So it's almost, in essence, saying we'll get everyone to sign up because no one will be able to sell a product out there unless they somehow have the seal of the marketing agreement, marketing order on their particular product. Ours is just a straight-out mandatory. If you're a processor, for example, you're already licensed, and in order to get that license, you have to find these risks. You have to define the risk factors necessary to have good agricultural practices. And I don't think we differ too much from the Western growers or others' proposals in terms of what those good agricultural practices are.
Okay, so I'm understanding more now. So basically, your legislation won't be dealing specifically with the detailed metrics that eventually will come out. It's just going to make it mandatory that everybody participate.
Right, exactly.
Does that make you happy, Chili Bob?
You bet. We weren't sure here in the farming industry what the legislation was going to read, and it's kind of hard to legislate food, safe food. But what you're attempting to do, I can understand it then, because it puts everybody on a level playing field, and I don't see a problem with this.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is that we didn't want to even attempt to come up with the metrics ourselves. The metrics will change as science changes. We know that, better science will produce, if you will, changing metrics. So we really wanted to leave it up to the Department of Health Services in terms of their protection of products to have an ongoing discussion with the agricultural folks, particularly in leafy greens. So they were constantly updating. Our issue is just mandatory participation, and then trying to figure out a way to find an assessment to actually pay for, if you will, some of these important inspections and the types of things that the Department of Health Services ultimately needs. I think we are on and have been having discussions with the Western growers on what approach ultimately leads us to the same finish line, which is a much safer product. All of us agree that it's going to be at best efforts because no matter what we do, we're not going to eliminate 100%, an E. coli outbreak. We need to also manage expectations. We need to make it a safer product and a better product than it is today. But until the science evolves, we're never going to, in essence, take E. coli out of the equation. We can only take those things that cause it off the table.
Let me ask both of you this. Do we have the science on this?
My answer is no.
Right, and I would say the same. And I think that's one of the things we're going to be pursuing with the Western growers is a way to, find those types of assessments that get to the science. And I would I would like to congratulate my colleague in Congress, Sam Farr, who ultimately is out trying to find additional money for science in the leafy green area. I think Congress would do us very well to try to fund Congressman Farr's legislation. I think that's a great approach. I don't think it's the only approach. I think we should have a regulatory framework and good science. But if you look at the successful, some of the industries that have been successful in this, I'll use the almond board, for example. You know, when they had salmonella outbreaks, they really went to work as an industry to fund a lot of proactive science that has become the basis for a safer product. Same for the Strawberry Commission. I think we need to find that kind of nexus in leafy greens as well.
Senator Flores, I've got a couple more questions here, and I'll let
sure.
you go. But would your legislation, would it have any effect on the enforcing agency? Are we still looking at CDFA as possibly enforcing agency on this?
Well, this is where the major difference between approaches are. Our approach is to give the Department of Health Services the power and to enforce.
And we're going to have to pick that up when we
sure.
come back from break. Bob, can you hang in there? Maybe not. Maybe he's disappeared.
I'll answer when we get back. Though.
Okay, good. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about E. coli 015787 with California State Senator Dean Flores and you, 800-624-2665-831-479-1080. Do you think government can protect us from the deadly E. coli bacteria? Curious to hear what you have to say. 800-624-2665-831-479-1080. Right back after these messages. Please do stay tuned. Well, it's raining, it's pouring, and all of which means the spinach is coming. Welcome to The Food Chain, folks. This is Michael Olson, your host for this hour of Woods Eating Radio. Today we're talking E. coli 015787 with California State Senator Dean Flores from the farming community of Shasta in the California's Great Central Valley. Senator, does your district encompass part of the Salinas Valley as well?
It does not, no.
It does not?
It is the other half of the lettuce growing season, if you will. So when things hit a point, lettuce growing hits Fresno County in a very significant way.
Mm-hmm. So give us a thumbnail of that really quickly for those of us who are living elsewhere in the across the fruited plain, as it were. You know, the idea is that you can get as much spinach and lettuce grown throughout the year so that we can eat leafy greens throughout the year, have our fresh salads all year long. So some parts of the year it's grown down in the desert of the Imperial Valley, and then production...
Coachella Valley switches mm-hmm. over, and in many cases to Fresno. And then, of course, Salinas Valley is an ongoing production salad bowl. I mean, I would probably say that they're pretty much going most of the year.
With the exception of a few short months, probably
exactly.
right now.
Right.
Okay, we're also talking with Chili Bob, who is a grower down there in the Salinas Valley. I don't guess you call yourselves farmers anymore, do you, Chili Bob?
Yeah, we are. We're still farmers.
Okay.
You bet.
So you want to finish that question? You were talking about which regulatory agency will handle the...
Well, I think I was answering.
Okay, good.
Yeah. The difference is the following, and that is under the marketing order, the voluntary approach offered by the Western growers, CDFA plays, if you will, a regulatory yes or no role after the growers voluntarily come up with their plan. CDFA says, we've looked at your plan, we've reviewed your plan, and we said yes. Then there's the issue of enforcement, and that enforcement is in the CDFA realm. Under our bills, it's number one, people don't get to sign up. They have to sign up in order to participate in the industry. And the enforcer is the Department of Health Services. And so we have, if you will, two different agencies. Ultimately that will play a role in the enforcement and regulatory aspects of this. We believe it belongs in health, and I think many in the industry will believe it belongs in the agricultural realm. We're just strong believers that currently, that at this point in time, the Department of Health Services has a better handle on the E. coli types of issues. We had a hearing in October, as I mentioned. They were 95% of the hearing. CDFA played a very small role in that hearing, and so we really would like to strengthen the department and give them more powers, if you will, in order to deal with things like embargo, deal with decisions that need to be made so that the FDA doesn't come in and say all of the spinach industry needs to stop, in essence, and doesn't get to the source quicker or fast enough. Mm-hmm. So our overall theory is that it belongs in the health realm, and that will be a major debate in the legislature. I can tell you that there are people that believe it belongs in the food and ag codes, and there are people who believe, like us, that it belongs in the health codes.
All of which is very confusing to we consumers, I'm sure. Chili Bob, quick follow-up?
Yeah, Senator, a couple things. Would the assessments still be on the growers? I mean, would we still be assessed to pay for this program?
You're going to be licensed?
Yes.
And charge the license fee?
Yes. The assessments are in both plans, if I can compare them. The voluntary regulatory approach of the marketing agreement is a 5 cents per carton assessment. The assessment under our bills is through the license, and it is assessed on a per-acre basis. That per-acre basis could range anywhere between $10 to $18 per acre. And both plans, obviously raise a certain amount of money. I believe the estimate for the marketing agreement is $1.2 million raised a year for enforcement. Under our particular fees that are raised, we raise about $4.5 million. So there's a huge differential in the amount of inspectors needed. But then again, our bills are asking for a lot more inspection. So our assessment per acre, as I mentioned, will run anywhere between $10 to $18. Per acre, and that ultimately raises, we think, the appropriate amount of money to step up the inspections that are necessary both on farm and at processors.
Which means it's going to cost us all a lot more money, right?
Is that per acre of just leafy greens or all farming acres?
It's per leafy greens.
Okay.
Okay, going to move on. Chili Bob, thank you so much for tuning in today. Appreciate it. Let's go quickly to Gabe, who has a very interesting question. Gabe, welcome to the Food Chain. California State Senator Dean Flores, go ahead.
Good morning. Hey, I've grown up next to the fields all my life in Salinas and walked my dogs in the fields. We've taken walks in the fields. Anyways, I've noticed signs going up all around saying due to food safety issues, no animals are allowed in the field.
Right.
And I wonder if that was a government law or if just the grower is putting those signs out, but I don't know any animals that can read. And... I mean, and the only animals that would be, you know, withheld are people's pets who walk their dogs pretty much on the roads. So I was wondering how, I mean, and all that aside, for thousands and thousands of years, and even today in other countries, people use animals to till their crops.
Yeah.
And so how does that, I'll take my answer off the air, but I was just wondering how that makes sense.
Well, that's a
good question, and thank you very much, Gabe, for passing it along.
That's a great question. I think it gets to one of the major issues in the Salinas Valley and the last E. coli outbreak, which is fencing. And as you probably know, the Food and Drug Administration had made an announcement that this ultimately came from some sort of wildlife source, that trampled through the fields. And, of course, wildlife are huge carriers of E. coli, particularly this strain. And so the issue is, how do we keep wildlife, if you will, out of the fields, away from the product that ultimately could somehow taint it in a way that produces E. coli? So fencing is a huge issue, and I think what you're seeing as you're walking your dog are growers who are now, in essence, saying, let's try to keep as much animals, wildlife, etc., out of our fields because we're not quite sure that can afford another E. coli outbreak. Yeah, because we've just had two more in the last few months.
Boom, boom.
So I think you're going to find that there are going to be higher restrictions of what is allowed on the field in the field, and in terms of those other countries that are using animal manure. I mean, we also have to have a handle on progress coming into the California.
That's a great question right there that you're just bringing up. Now, are the rules that we are going to lay down for our farmers going to apply for to the farmers who are importing produce from other countries? Or are we going to impose these rules on our farmers and then allow other farmers in other countries to, just do things on their own and then hope that will be okay?
Well, Michael, this is why we like our approach much better. Under the leafy green marketing approach, in essence, what happens is it says that whoever is producing this gets the magic seal, the seal that says we've used good agricultural practices as the safest product.
Mm-hmm.
The theory is that grocery stores are going to flock to buying these particular bags because, of course, consumers are going to go towards the bags that ultimately have the highest standards. And I'm not sure if the stores are going to carry and continue to carry product from outside of this country, let's say Mexican lettuce, for example, and that consumers are going to make a decision and really understand what the seal means. If they don't understand what the seal means, you could still have a very bad product coming in from other countries that could be somewhat potentially dangerous.
Right, right, because they have no rules.
Right.
You know, we have to keep animals away from our crops, but there's no rules down.
And under our particular legislation, giving it to the health inspectors not only allows the health inspectors to say it's a good product for products grown here, but it also allows the health inspector to look at product coming into California.
Oh, okay. I want to pick that up when we get back. And Bruce, who has a great comic, right back. Do stay tuned. But what do you think out there? Can government protect us from good food that has gone bad? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with California State Senator Dean Flores about E. coli 015787. Do you think the government can protect us? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. But, you know, Senator Flores, I'd like to ask you the same question I asked the growers when we last visited this issue here a couple weeks ago. What happens if we go through all of this and we have another series of contaminations?
Right. Well, I think this, you know, quite frankly, points to the major flaw in the voluntary approach offered by the Western growers, because, as I've mentioned, the plan, it relies on everyone getting this seal and having the highest agricultural practices and consumers and retailers buying, selling the seal, and somehow that makes everyone live up to the seal's promise that this is grown the safest way possible. Your question is exactly shows that the plan isn't sustainable, because what if there is an E. coli outbreak in one of those bags that has a seal?
Right.
So the word gets out, don't buy the bag with the seal, because that's where the E. coli came from. And ultimately, everyone that produced up to the standards of that seal is almost punished in the market, because even though one bag may have had, with the seal, had E. coli in it, I think average, you know, just knowing consumers, you know, the word gets out very quickly. Don't buy anything with the seal on it, because that was the, those were the bags that ultimately had.
Let me ask you the same question. What if your three bills pass and everybody must comply and we still go through this?
Well, I think the difference is that what if the three bills pass and there is any other E. coli outbreak, I think first and foremost, one of the bills says we're going to be able to trace this particular E. coli outbreak back within days immediately to the exact source. And so therefore, we know what the source is. We can pull those bags immediately so that the rest of the spinach industry can continue to flourish and keep selling in markets. It doesn't rely on some sort of standardized stamp. It simply says that we get directly to the licensed person.
Right. And the grower's plan does not comply with this, right? The marketing order. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Not sure what that was, but I think what it says is that the growers, ultimately, the plan probably isn't sustainable with a stamp. Our plan simply says we get to it quicker, faster, we embargo the product, and we give consumers the assurance that this was the source and bags have been pulled from that source and the rest is safe. We can't say that today when we have an outbreak. In fact, you saw the FDA embargo almost all of leafy greens, saying no one should buy any leafy green in California because we couldn't get to the source quicker and faster.
Okay, good. Let's go quickly to Bruce, who has a very interesting question for you with respect to immunizing ourselves from E. coli 015787. Bruce, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. Let me rattle on for a minute here.
But only a minute.
We are immune to our own E. coli. This is a variant, this is a mutation of an E. coli that basically all mammals have. It started small, and it spread to a lot of animals, and it's going to spread. It's probably going to go all over the United States, and it'll be just as ubiquitous as the E. coli we have in our system. So I think that by far the cheapest and easiest solution would be to become immune to this new strain. Now, I heard a doctor on the radio propose that it could be as simple as
kind of like a polio vaccine for
bacteria,
E. coli.
Like even put it in milk, so, or, you know, something that kids would drink, and or even adults, and they would become immune to it. And you wouldn't have to have this policing of the hogs and the birds and, you know, putting up fences. And I mean, once we're immune to it, see, we're immune to our own.
Right.
We just become immune to this. And when the next mutation comes out, and there'll be another one, you know, we could deal with it fairly easily, especially if we have a mechanism set up for that.
Well, okay, let's toss that one to State Senator Dean Flores. There you go, Senator Flores. What do you think about becoming immune to this?
Yeah. Well, that's why I love doing shows like this, because I learn something every time. But that's an interesting concept. I think, of course, we'd like to look into that. I've never heard that before. And, you know, I think I will make sure that we absolutely look into that particular aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that we have to do something on this, because this is a very debilitating disease. And once you get E. coli, it's very fast moving, and it as you know, it could kill. And there's very little recovery to this particular strain. So there has to be something on the public health side, absolutely, because we're so focused in on the product that produces it. But if we can get our medical folks and our researchers on the health side to focus in on what the last caller just mentioned, I think that ultimately has to be part of the equation, no doubt.
You know, somebody also mentioned a phage therapy, that possibly virus or bacteria eating viruses would be a solution to this 157 situation. But the science simply hasn't caught up to this at all, has it?
No, it hasn't. I think the grower that called earlier, the farmer, you know, hit it right when you ask, what's the research? I mean, there's been very little research in this particular industry as compared to other industries. And I think the reason for that is that, you know, these outbreaks, from my point of view, have been taken very seriously. Of course, they're serious now, when the industry lost about $100 million and people still have not bought on to buying spinach anymore. But, you know, that has to translate into some sort of research. Scientists have to be involved in terms of producing better understandings of this strain, and once we do, I think the industry is going to be in much better shape in terms of preparation.
California State Senator Dean Flores, we're talking about E. coli 015787 and how or if government can protect us from that nasty little bug. When we get back, I'm going to ask a big question about small farms. Will this legislation being proposed severely limit the ability of small farms, those farms who do not grow food-ready salad greens, to exist? Curious to see and hear what Senator Flores has to say about that, because it's been asked many times of me. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. What do you think out there? Can government protect us from the becoming more and more common, E. coli 015787. Today we're asking California State Senator Dean Flores, state senator from the little town of Shafter in California's Great Central Valley. There really is no guarantee, is there, Senator?
At the end of the day, these are all best efforts, and I think the question we have always posed this as, you know, if there are seven major items that are, you know, increase the likelihood of E. coli in this type of product, wouldn't we want to kind of take those seven off the table as much as possible, or at least six out of the seven makes a safer product? And I think the approach that we're taking is one is how can we take off those most dangerous aspects that have the highest likelihood of producing E. coli? And, you know, I think that we're just better off when government and regulators have the opportunity to enforce those types of protections.
You know, I've had many people ask, will these new regulations imposed by both industry and government not have a severely limiting effect on the people who grow foods for farmers market and direct for the consumer?
Yeah.
Will small farmers be able to survive your attempt to keep us safe from E. coli?
I think they will. I think ultimately if people will rise to a level playing field. We're not asking farms in any of our legislation to create, you know, massive amounts of research, for example, or to produce assessments that are not in the reach on a per acre basis. We don't think, you know, $10 or so or $18 for the larger growers is that much of assessment and a financial hit for those small, small growers in terms of acreage per year. But everyone contributes, everybody pitches in, and ultimately government comes in with our allocation as well. So I should say that, you know, we're trying to raise $4.5 million from our bills, but we're also in government going to match 4.5 with that to have a $10 million assessment. So I think the smaller growers get the advantage of, if you will, some larger dollars from the state of California. Now, I can tell you there's going to be more paperwork. It is more difficult for smaller farmers in many cases to keep up with that type of paperwork. I think the goal is to try to figure out a small farm program where the paperwork, because they're so limited in terms of the acreage and what they grow for farmers markets, that be some sort of condensed process versus some of the larger, you know, mass growers in terms of...
The other area of concern was set-asides. You know, you talk about, well, we have to protect the crops from wild animals, which means that we have to have an acre of open ground, I guess, between the fence and the crops. Well, some farmers only have an acre.
I think we're going to have to think pretty hard on, you know, some of the buffer pieces in our legislation. I can tell you that I think that debate is better had in the state legislature rather than some so closed door, you know, marketing agreement people voluntarily sign up for, and then or have to be mandated even under the voluntary approach, even if you're a small farmer, to participate in. These are the kinds of things through a bill that we get to change, and we get to figure out how to, in many cases, make it workable for the smaller farmer. I like public processes like this. This bill will go through 8 or 9 hearings before it even is considered to be law signed by the governor. And it's that opportunity for a lot of the smaller farmers who are somewhat well represented and, quite frankly, do come to the Capitol to give us their input. And, of course, we're always going to try to be as accommodating as possible, with the whole course, the bottom standard being, if you will, a good product, a safe product.
There you go, folks. California State Senator Dean Flores, this has been The Food Chain. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.